From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Large-scale land acquisition in developing countries to secure food or natural resources is nothing new, but it's grown exponentially in recent years. There are conflicting reports of how much land has been snapped up in the last two decades, ranging from 120 to 600 million acres, mostly in the global south, 70% in sub-Saharan Africa alone. Science journalist Fred Pierce spent a year circling the globe to interview the grabbers and the grabbed from, among them Gulf sheiks and African tribal leaders, an evangelical ex-prison boss, hedge fund managers, and Ukrainian farmers. We spoke to Fred Pierce when The Land Grabbers, The New Fight Over Who Owns the Earth, was published, and asked him who today's land grabbers are and why they are buying up so much of the planet.
Well, land is getting more valuable because, as Mark Twain once said, they're not making it anymore. People are running short of food, so prices for many food commodities are going up, and other things that we grow on the land, like cotton, like rubber. With commodity prices rising, it looks like quite a good bet to buy the land that grows this stuff. So quite a lot of speculators and investors are getting into that. And of course, national governments are getting very concerned as well about providing food for their people. We had a big price spike in foods 4 or 5 years ago, and that panicked quite a lot of governments. They know that bread riots can bring down their governments quite quickly. So there are quite a lot of things in the mix here. But the one thing you can say is that land is the new hot commodity and people are buying it in a big way.
But if people are buying, people must be willing to sell. So who's doing the selling?
The selling seems to be being done principally by governments. Now, this is a bit of a problem because they're selling the land from beneath the people who've lived on the land, who've used the land, whether it's forest land or pasture land or farmland for, you know, centuries. But in much of Africa especially, governments formally have control, ownership of the land. And those governments are thinking about, well, how can we invest in modern technology? How can we get advanced agricultural systems into our land? And they're selling land off or selling long leases to agribusiness, if you like, to Western companies, to Arab companies, to Chinese companies, anybody really that will come in and offer investment. And for me, the problem is that nobody's distinguishing between good investment and bad investment. Mm. Good investment that would help the local communities, provide them with jobs, help them grow more on their own farms, and bad investment which will throw people off the land and simply bring in mechanization and send the people off to the cities. And I don't think that's the kind of development that is going to be good for, well, certainly not good for the people who live on the land. So there's a kind of an economic issue here, and there's also a land rights issue. There's a legal matter of who has the right to the land. And a lot of people believe that they're being thrown off the land, which is rightfully theirs.
Well, of course, you tell this story, sadly, over and over again of big land interests coming in and what happens to the people who live there. This process of villagization, which is happening in several of the places where land is being grabbed. So give us an example of what's involved. I'm thinking of so many in the book. What could you sum up for us now?
There are a lot, but I met a guy called Omot.
In Western Ethiopia, yes.
Yes, that's right, in a province called Gambela in Western Ethiopia. And he'd lived in what was basically forest land, hunting and fishing and taking wild honey and so on from the forest, making a decent livelihood for his family, and his ancestors had done that over centuries, and suddenly found that one day a Saudi, the second richest Saudi in the world, turned up on his doorstep, had put in an airstrip, was bringing in trucks, was digging a canal to drain the wetland where he got his fish, was chopping down the forests and wanted to grow rice there. And that's the first thing he heard about it. And the government turned up and said, well, I'm sorry, the land is going to this new investor. You're going to have to move into the village down the road. These guys, that's not what they want. They say, look, this land is ours. And, you know, I'm afraid I side with them. I don't really see what the Saudi guy called Mohammed Amoudi is planning to do there is going to be any good to the people living in that forest. It's going to denude the land and, for me, destroy their lives.
Fred Pierce is with us. He's a reporter on the environment and development from 65 countries over the past 20 years. And we're talking with him today about his new book, book, The Land Grabbers, The New Fight Over Who Owns the Earth, full of interviews and case studies of the unprecedented number of huge-scale land grabs in recent years. Well, underlying many of these grabs, of course, is the prospect of making a killing when this perfect storm of rising population, changing diet, and climate change hits. Now, it's interesting to me that despite all the climate change denial and shrinking resource denial, many huge interests are purchasing land to hedge against a coming disaster, you know, with big ticket purchases of land. So I'm wondering if public denial of climate change, for example, becomes an accomplice in this. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I think I do. For somebody who's written about climate change quite a lot, I'm rather alarmed that these land grabs are often being done in the name of protecting the world against climate change. In other words, people say we're coming up against a sort of Malthusian crisis over production of food because of climate change and rising populations. And the only way out is to mechanize farming and to turn it into more like something you see in the American prairies than something you'll see in African peasant farming. And yes, some of that will produce more food, but for me the issue is not actually the amount of food that we produce around the world. We already produce enough food. It's how we distribute it and how the poorest people get access to it. And the problem with the land grabbing is that, of course, it's the poorest people, the rural inhabitants of Africa, who are at most risk of famine, at most risk of hunger, and yet they're the people who are having their land taken away from them.
Well, these big land interests are obviously banking on giant agribusiness, but you're talking about in the book, you give us a lot of examples of what it can and cannot deliver. Can you go through that for us?
Well, it can deliver greater productivity, but it won't necessarily deliver for the people who need it. Investment in the smallholders themselves, investment in the farmers themselves. There's a lot of evidence from Africa in recent years. We have a lot of bad stories about Africa, and sure, there are some bad things going on, but there are an awful lot of good news stories about how modest efforts to help farmers get access to markets and to grow better crops, new seed varieties and that kind of thing, or have access to more fertilizer. Many farmers simply can't get the fertilizer they need, and that has a transformative effect on their farming. That these can transform their lives and transform the productivity of their farms. So the argument is that you don't want to take their land away from them. You want to invest in their land. So I'm in favor of investment in farming, but I'm also in favor of investing in the farmers who live on the land. For instance, I mean, in Europe, we eat quite a lot of green beans that are air freighted in from East Africa. They're picked in the fields of Africa, and 2 days later, we're buying them in our big stores in Britain and across Europe. Some environmentalists don't like that because they say, look at the carbon footprint of and the air miles of air freighting these beans in. Mm-hmm. But I've gone to visit the farmers that are growing the beans, and they're getting quite a good livelihood on their own small holdings. They still have their own farms, and they're producing the beans, and they're being picked up at the end of the road, taken down to the airstrip at Nairobi, freighted into Britain, and we're buying them. And that, for me, is a way forward for African farmers. They can get access to markets, get better livelihoods, and they've still got control of their own farms. And I think that's really important. But if the big man comes in and takes all their land from them and then sells to a foreign market, then that is going to be a big problem for the African farmers.
And it's not just food security, it's not just resources, but you detail green grabbers. Now, these are people under the auspices of protecting wildlife. One case, the billionaire Anton Rupert, who enlisted a Dutch royalty, De Beers, Cartier, Daimler Chrysler, to establish a peace park and wildlife preserve in South Africa. Now, he and others are now, and the other principals are now dead. But what happens when conservation and human rights come into conflict?
Yeah, this again becomes it's a fraught problem for those of us who argue both for the rights of people to control their own land, but also take an interest in environmental issues. There's a real danger, I think, when Western, usually Western, but at any rate outside environmentalists, come into a land that they don't know very well and start buying up their land to protect nature, because they land up being in conflict with the local people there. And there is increasing amount of evidence. I'm a science journalist. I try and look at the research evidence that local people managing their own landscapes are much better conservationists either than people coming in from outside, even national parks. There's a lot of research being done comparing, for instance, forests in Africa, forests controlled by local communities and forests controlled by national governments as national parks for conservation protection. And you find that actually the forests that are preserved best are the forests that are controlled by local communities. So I'm very wary about taking land rights away from local people, even in the name of conservation, because it doesn't work. One reason, of course, it doesn't work is because it creates all these conflicts. As I say, I refer to it as green grab. If you go to East Africa, the number of cattle herders that you'll find who are really very, very angry that their pastures have been taken away from them to turn into sometimes into hunting lodges and sometimes just into safari parks for rich, it has to be said, North Americans and Europeans to come in and photograph the wildlife. Somebody's getting rich there, but it certainly isn't the local people. It certainly isn't the people who believe their land is theirs.
Fred Pearce is author of several books about the environment and development. You'll find more on his most recent book, The Land Grabbers, The New Fight Over Who Owns the Earth, at wordofmouthradio.org.